You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome aboard. It's New Retirement Radio here on WTCM News Talk 580 with Prout Financial Design. Joining us today in the studio live, Heidi Cartwright is back. Welcome back, Heidi.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back.
Deanne Jennings is back. Good morning, Deanne.
Good morning, Ron.
Dennis Prout is not here.
He is not.
But we have Nathan Prout. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, everybody.
Hail, hail. The gang is all here to talk about your money, retirement.
And, that's right.
So Dennis is not in today. So Heidi, you're going to...
I'm gonna take what Dennis was going to talk about.
Okay.
And but first, I want to just say thanks for listening, everybody. And today is October 13th.
Let me also ask Heidi for your titles, which I can never remember, so people know you are what?
Well, I'm a financial advisor, but the designation I have is the RICP, and that stands for Retirement Income Certified Professional. And what that really means is I took a series of courses and passed all these different tests.
Yeah.
But what we studied in that is how is the best way to establish an income stream from your various investments, and what products are best to use, and strategies and theories that you can use to get the best result.
And we're actually, you're going to cover some of that today. Nathan Prout, what's your what's your title or your certifications there, sir?
Yeah, so I'm working on my Series 65 right now, which will be the last hurdle for me really before I can be considered a full-fledged financial advisor.
Wow.
So right now I have my life and health, so I can talk about insurance and those sorts of things. And I got my bachelor's in finance, graduated from Davenport last summer.
Wow. So you're
with a lot of online classes.
Amazing. Yeah. And Deanne Jennings is, you're the manager of everybody, right?
Oh, yeah. That's me. I'm director of operations and administration at
there
our
you
office.
Go.
Yep.
Director
Which
of ops.
She runs everything and keeps us all on track and makes sure our office works really well. So I am going to be talking about how to handle required withdrawals or required minimum distributions from retirement accounts. And the reason that we're going to talk about this is, you know, it might bring some more anxiety because of the current situation out there. I mean, we all know that the market is down and down significantly, so it might hurt a little more for people to make those distributions. A bear market, it may surprise people, a bear market or a market that's down, it really doesn't change the size of that required minimum distribution. The fact is the way that the RMD is calculated is they look at your account balance from the year before. So for those taking this year in 2022, they're looking at that December 31st of 2021 number, what was in your account.
Which might have been higher than where you are now.
Mm-hmm. Chances are it was.
Probably is in most cases. So they're looking at that number, and then they take that number and they divide it by the uniform lifetime table, which is something that the government puts out, and it has a divisor, and that's what's used to calculate that number. So just because the market is down does not mean that your RMD will be down.
And you have to take that starting at what age?
72.
72, they say you must take this amount out. No matter what, you have to take it out.
That's right.
Whether you want it or need it or don't.
Right. And if you don't take it out, the penalty is 50% of what you should have taken out. So it's pretty hefty. They wanted to get your attention on this one.
Wow. So I know for all of your clients, you have a system, right, for notifying them of that?
We do. Yeah. We do. We have somebody in our office that is designated to make sure that everybody who's over the age of 72 or beneficiaries of IRAs are taking those required minimum distributions.
Are they notified in some way other than you? Does the government send out a little reminder or anything?
No.
They want the money.
Exactly. Yeah. They get a penalty if you don't take it.
Wow. So. But the custodians... So that your custodian is where your funds are at. So the custodian will usually send you a letter and say your RMD this year is X.
Okay.
So that's another reminder you get. But that's one thing that we do for our clients is we like to take that on ourselves to make sure that we're proactive in making sure that gets done. So no one has to pay that big penalty. So one of the effects of the market going down is that when you withdraw funds, you might end up withdrawing a larger percentage of that account to meet the RMD. But that can be the painful part of taking the RMDs when the market is down. But the IRS doesn't make you sell any certain things. So there's a couple of strategies that you can use. And one of them is that you can use cash in your IRA to just take the cash out to fulfill that RMD. And this is a good reason to develop a small buffer within that IRA. You could have a low-risk money market fund, or you can have cash, or you could have an ultra short-term bond fund or something like that, where you can take the funds from that will expose you to less of a loss than maybe some other higher risk assets.
Does that only apply to IRAs, or what about 401ks? You still have the RMD?
That is correct. Yes, there's different rules with that,
of course.
But you do have to take, if you still have funds in a 401k and you're over 72, you do have to take RMDs from those as well, and all the other numbers like 403Bs, et cetera, et cetera.
So. And if people are concerned saying, well, I don't want to pull my money out right now because my account is down, and as you say, I'll be taking a bigger percentage of it, but they have to take it out. So they take it out. Again, they don't need it. Maybe they have some other source of income right now. Mm-hmm. They can invest it then. Can't they throw it into another in stocks or a CD or something like that?
Well, that's excellent because this sort of leads into next strategy.
All right.
So we talked about having some lower risk assets in there, and you could draw that RMD from that. But you can also do another thing where you can take things out in kind and just change them from the IRA to maybe a non-qualified account. And what we mean by a non-qualified account is that's an account that doesn't have retirement rules or restrictions on it. This could be an individual account, a joint account, a trust account. So you can move the actual shares that you have in the IRA, move those shares to a non-qualified account. Of course, you have to pay your income tax on that distribution, but you don't have to sell those actual shares, and you can allow the market to recover and regain some of what you've lost over the last year over the long term. So that is the idea of that one. You haven't really sold anything, so you're leaving that gain, that future possible gain, out there for yourself. Another little silver lining, if you'd use this strategy, is that if you are holding on to that stock and then the stock value goes up over time and you have a larger gain on it, if you hold on to that stock for at least a year, that is called a long-term gain if you sell it. And that is taxed at different rates than income tax rates, which can be lower. So you could pay less overall tax on the share, on the gain. So just a little bit of a strategy there. So is there a best time to take your RMD? Well, picking that perfect moment, having that a crystal ball that actually works so that you know exactly what that is, but most of us don't have those crystal balls. So really, the answer is no one really knows. So you just have to look at these RMDs as part of your long-term planning.
What did you say, best time to take your RM? Do you have to take it, though, right, once a year?
You do, but you can take it in January or December or July, you know. And if you're trying to time it to when the market's the best place for you to take it, that's just really difficult to do. Like I said, it's really hard to time the market.
Yeah, you could, if you wanted to try to spread out that risk a little bit, you could also take a portion of it every month or every quarter or something like that to fully satisfy it by December 31st of the year that it's required.
So you take your RMD out monthly if you want.
You could,
You can. And a lot of people do that. It just helps supplement that, you know, your monthly Social Security, and you have to take your RMD, and people just take it monthly. But other people like to do things like time it, like I'm going to take it out when my property taxes due.
Yeah.
I'm going to take it out when I have to pay that annual car insurance. So if you know you have like a big expense, you can time that RMD to come into your account so that you can pay off that without having to dip into your savings or something like that.
I have a quick question. If you withdraw your RMD, is it possible to invest it into another type of account?
Yes, yes, you can. Just like we said, you can move things in kind. You could move stock from an IRA to an individual account. You can also, if you take cash out, you can move that into an investment account. It doesn't have to be your checking or savings. It can be an investment account. As long as it's not an IRA, it has to come out of the IRA, that protected tax-deferred account, into a non-qualified account. All right. So for many retirees, RMDs aren't as big of an issue as it first appears. Like we've talked about, it could be a monthly distribution. And just for example, when you are age 72, withdrawals are about 3.65% of the balance. So it's not a huge amount. It is a starts out at these lower amounts. At age 80, that figure is 4.95%, and at 90, it's 8.2%. But I do have the chart here, and I would tell you that once you hit about 120, it's 50%. So that's where it gets, that's where it starts really hurting, I think.
Another, just like you were saying, Heidi, another strategy, not for your RMD, but after you take your RMD and satisfy that, since we are in a down market, it might make sense to do some Roth conversions this year as well.
Right.
So, yeah. Again, you have to satisfy your RMD before you can do that Roth conversion. But just like Heidi was talking about transferring the shares in kind, you could do that to a Roth IRA as well, and take some advantage of the down market.
Right. And you could take your RMD amount that you received, that you took out first before you did your conversion, and use that cash to pay the tax bill on the conversion.
Oh, that's perfect.
One final point for people taking RMDs right now, we are at historically low tax rates. So getting money out right now isn't necessarily bad overall. The money can't stay in your IRA forever. Eventually, that money has to come out either by you or your beneficiaries. And right now, we do have historically low income tax rates. So if that makes people feel better, with a little bit of a silver lining in having to take those RMDs.
We had a couple of text questions. One of them is, when do they release the third quarter GDP? I did a quick look at that, and October 27th at 8:30 a.m.
There you go.
So that'd be after the end of September. Takes him almost a month to tally that up. And also, this is for RMDs, required minimum distributions. My birthday is right at the end of December. Do I take the money out the year of my birthday or the following year? So if you turn 72 in December of whatever this is, 2022, should they have taken an RMD out already for this year, the year of their 72nd birthday?
Not necessarily. necessarily. Uh-huh. They have a couple of options. For the first year that you have a required minimum distribution, you have to take that first distribution by April 15th of the year following when you turn 72.
Okay.
But keep in mind, if you choose that option, you would have two RMDs coming out in that year.
Ew.
Both being taxable, because you'd have the this year, 2022 and yeah. 2023. You can pre-schedule a distribution to come out, you know, on your birthday if you want to make it so that it's automatically going to be distributed into your account. But you do get that buffer zone for the first year only.
So if you turn 72 on December 31st,
mm-hmm.
for that particular calendar year, you do have to take an RMD. Even
you
though
do.
You can put it in the next year if you want to, but you still have to take it that year.
For that okay. year, yeah. Right. If you are 72 on December 31st at midnight, or 11:59,
yep.
you
must
take. Then you have to take it.
All right. Nathan Prout is in today, as he was last week. What are you discussing today, sir?
Yeah, so today, continuing the topic of RMDs, the IRS recently released their notice on October 7th that they will be waiving a 50% penalty on missed 2021 and 2022 inherited retirement account required minimum distributions within the 10-year payout rule.
Okay.
Now, this is significant because when they released the initial rules, it was sort of up to your interpretation on whether or not an RMD would be required within that 10-year window. So a lot of people thought that it wouldn't be, just so long as they drained that retirement inherited account at the end of that 10-year window. But the IRS does say that the at least as fast rule applies.
So this is for people who have inherited somebody's IRA.
Correct. Yep.
They do have to take RMDs.
Assuming that the IRA they inherited was already subject to RMDs.
Okay.
Just to make it nice and confusing.
But if they failed to do that in 21 and 22, there's no penalty?
Correct.
Ah.
Further, if you did pay a penalty, you can ask for a refund from the IRS.
Is that because of all the COVID madness that they've offered that exemption?
No, it's just because they didn't provide a clear instruction on their first set of rules, which is highly irregular for the IRS to do something like that.
Wow.
So
it's taking something that's sort of complicated and making it even more complicated.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and to your earlier point, Ron, if the account owner died in 2021 before he or she was required to take their RMD, you wouldn't have to take RMDs during that 10-year period, but you would have to still drain that account during those 10 years.
So only those accounts that were where the owner was already taking RMDs.
Right.
Do the inheritors have to keep doing that for 10 years? But if they did not, for 21 or 22, no penalty.
Right. And then that whole balance that is in the IRA has to be out by the 10th year.
Got
so
it.
You have to take RMDs, but you can always take more because it's a required minimum. It's not a maximum, so you can always take more out.
So if you inherit an IRA, you've got to pull it all out within 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You can take any amount that you want as long as you're doing the required minimum if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to sit on it and at the end of the 10th, 9th year, take it all out at once, you could.
Right,
or you
but
could
you want to think about taxes.
Yeah, you could take 10 equal installments. You could do it any way you wanted to.
Yeah, so if you know your income, for instance, is going to be significantly lower in 5 years or something, and you're still subject to the RMDs during that period, you could just do the RMDs and then start taking more of it out, you know, in years 6 through 10, essentially.
All right.
So if anybody thinks they're in this situation, they should definitely call their financial advisor and go in and talk to them about it and make sure that if they are due a refund, that they get it.
Correct.
So potentially good news there.
Yeah.
Potentially.
The next topic I have is about student loan forgiveness. And we've been getting a lot of questions about this, but student loan forgiveness scams are on the rise right now. There are a lot of scammers that are putting together what they promise are early approval programs or ways to make sure your application is processed faster. But the small detail of that is that there is no application that has been released yet for this. The education department is expected to release an application this month for the forgiveness program, which will cancel up to $10,000 in federal student loan debt for borrowers who earn less than $125,000.
There could be, and I think somebody did file suit, some governors may have filed suit questioning whether the president had the authority to forgive these loans.
Yeah, so there are several lawsuits questioning the legality of the plan, which could further delay the timeline. But ultimately, the main takeaway for this is that there is no application out yet. So anybody who's promising to process your application, if only you give them your bank credentials or something like that, is lying to you.
And they're out already. Not admiration, but just amazement at these scammers, things they pounce on.
Yeah, they look for those weak points, or you know, they prey on those people who are in need of money the most, which is
trusting.
Obviously terrible.
Yeah. And I believe we're going to Deanne Jennings, the Director of Operations and the Controller of All Data.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Got some stats for you this morning. Do you guys remember the Inflation Reduction Act? That seems like a long time ago. A lot has happened in the financial world.
Has inflation been reduced?
I know.
Jeez.
Man, that seems like a long time ago. But anyway, regarding the Inflation Reduction Act, corporate minimum tax is expected to raise $258 billion over the next decade via a 15% minimum tax on the 150 U.S. companies that have annual profits of at least $1 billion. And that's the Joint Committee on Taxation.
That's not a lot of money over 10 years. Okay. For the Fed, it's like $26 billion a year for the feds. That's nothing.
Yeah. It's a part of the Inflation Reduction Act for sure.
All right.
OPEC, a group of world's most powerful oil producers, Russia and other allies, will curb oil production by 2 million barrels a day, which was twice as much as analysts predicted, the biggest cut since 2020. It's a blow to the U.S. and G7 allies who want to low oil prices for the consumers. And that's Robinhood's source.
All right.
A new generation of private brokers, including a limo driver from St. Louis, are cashing in on arms deals to Ukraine. The U.S. has authorized over $300 million in private deals this year, up from the $15 million last year. The source is Robinhood. The International Monetary Fund predicts that inflation will lurk for a long time. The IMF predicts global growth will slow to 2.7% in 2023. It anticipates global inflation will peak in late 2022 at 8.8%. The bottom line is that over one-third of the global economy will see two consecutive quarters of negative growth. The three largest economies in the world, which are U.S., China, and the European Union, will continue to slow. And that source is Market Brief's International Monetary Fund.
Hmm. Not very cheery.
No, nope. Not very cheery. Nissan Motor Company is dumping its business in Russia for 1 euro, which is 97 cents. The company will take a $687 million loss on the deal. The deal makes Nissan the latest company to exit Russia since its invasion back in February. But if you read the fine print, the deal will give Nissan the right to buy back the business within 6 years. And that source is Market Briefs.
That's interesting.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Over 15% of American households are behind on rent this fall. The inflated cost of living and soaring home prices keeps renters from making their payments on time. Renters are paying an average of 12.6% more per month compared to last year, and that's Market Brief source.
That's a lot.
Yes.
I mean, when you're
per
budgeting,
month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something you feel.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Your rent goes up that much.
Absolutely.
If you pay $1,000 a month, you're up 120 a month. Your grocery bill's way up. So that's, you know, $30 a week plus maybe another 30 to 50 a week in groceries is up. And for a lot of families, that can be disruptive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, painful.
Absolutely.
Gas is up, electricity's up.
Yeah, all areas, absolutely. Yeah, and that made me stop and really think 12.6% per month. That's, just incredible. Monday, this coming Monday, October 17th, is a big day in the financial world. It is a tax deadline. October 17th will mark important tax deadlines for tax year 2021, the final deadline for individual federal income tax returns, the nationwide final deadline for filing individuals' federal income tax return for tax year 2021 after having filed for an extension. For more information, visit your IRS website. And October 17th is also a deadline for QRP SEP's Simple IRA Contribution Deadline. The postmark deadline for Qualified Retirement Plan, QRP, Simplified Employee Pension, the SEP, and the Employer Savings Incentive Match Plan for employees, the Simple, prior year contributions in accordance with an automatic extension granted by the IRS. Requests must be received in good order for processing. If an internal cash transfer is requested to fund a contribution deposit, adequate cash must be available in the delivering account on or before October 17th. So if you have an extension, remember, Monday, October 17th.
Right. So you have to wrap up all that business from 2021. Mm-hmm. And if you did file an extension, don't forget, because it's this weekend's the last.
Absolutely.
Yep.
A question on the text line here. I have had an inherited IRA since 2012. Taking my RMDs, do I have to empty it this year under the 10-year rule because it would be 2022? Or the 10-year rule is how new and who does that impact?
That's right. So this person would, based on this information that we have, would not be under that rule because that started for people who passed away 2020
okay.
and after. So if you inherited prior to that, you're under the old rules, and you just continue taking that RMD based on your life expectancy. And so you're in a different category.
All right. Let's see. Oh, we got that one. War Dogs, the movie. Text on that. Hi, Heidi. Can you go over the advantages and disadvantages of converting your traditional IRA to a Roth?
Sure.
And can we trust the U.S. government to repay U.S. bonds?
Well, the United States government is one of the highest rated creditors out there. So those are seen as the highest standard of credit out there in the market. So if you have government bonds, they're pretty secure. But, you know, we can't always say 100% absolutely anytime at all because you never know. In general, they have the highest credit out there. And then the rest of the question, Ron, was?
The rest of the question, the Roth IRA. What are the advantages and disadvantages of converting to a Roth IRA?
Well, what happens when you do that? This is when you take money that's currently in an IRA and you move it to your Roth IRA, or you open a Roth IRA and transfer either the funds or the actual assets. When you do that, you pay income tax in the year when you do that transaction. So you will pay income tax on that. But the benefit to that is once it goes in to the Roth IRA, any growth that goes to those underlying assets will come out tax exempt or tax free. When you make distributions from a Roth IRA, there is no tax. When you make distributions from a traditional IRA, it is taxed as income. So maybe if you're in a lower tax bracket right now, that would be a reason. If you think tax rates are going up in the future, it would be a good reason to do a conversion. A lot of people like to do Roth conversions right now when the market is low because you're getting more shares over at a lower dollar amount if you transfer them from your traditional to your Roth. And, you know, the market moves in cycles. We came out of 2008, 2009. It was about 5 years. So on the other side of that, when it's recovered, if you have that timeline, if you have at least 5 years out there, That's a good indicator that maybe it will recover and then that gain will be tax-free instead of coming out and being taxable.
Yeah, another advantage, of course. Oh, boy.
Is that a real simple answer?
Another advantage, of course, is that there are no RMDs on a Roth.
Correct.
So you are never required to take out money on your own Roth.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Good point. What was I going to say about the Roth advantages there that Heidi was talking about? David Lee Roth threw me off a little bit there.
Well, usually the things you want to look at is you don't want to do it so much of a conversion that you push yourself into a higher tax bracket. You want to be able to keep the funds in there for about 5 years, and you want to be able to pay the tax with money other than the money that you're converting. So you want to have that money in the bank or an investment account that you can access to pay that additional income tax.
Are you seeing your clients, some of your clients come in and do that now?
Yeah, especially with, so we have the sunset coming up of the current tax law in
2025,
I believe. So a lot of people are just setting up distribution or conversion plans that will go from here through 2025. To take advantage of the tax brackets being historically low, which are, again, probably not going to last.
I was just going to say that. They are historically low, and now is your time if you can do that.
Yeah.
All right, and Heidi has some information regarding hurricanes. Is that right?
Right. Well, with the recent hurricane Ian in Florida, was it Ian or Ian?
Ian.
Ian.
Ian in Florida and one in Puerto Rico before that.
That's right. And so a lot of these questions come up. Either people live in Florida or they have relatives who live in Florida. But the IRS has usually allowed people to access their 401k balances. So 401k plans are set up to keep your retirement savings out of reach until your retirement age. Hence, they have those penalties. But the Internal Revenue Service allows savers to pull money out for certain economic hardships, including some of the other ones are buying a first home, preventing foreclosure, covering high medical bills. And since the IRS added natural disasters to that list of sanctioned reasons of why you can pull money out, that happened in 2020. So one of the first things you need to do if you are thinking about accessing that, because we've seen the pictures, Ron, you've seen those pictures. People are, homes are just like totally wiped out. So there's going to be a lot of expense in trying to get yourself back. And every plan is different. So before you access any money in a 401k plan, you want to make sure that you check with your plan administrator to make sure that it's allowed. This is something that an employer can say yes or no to. So you just want to check that. Most plans do, but it's better to check before you do it than get yourself into trouble with penalties.
All right. Ben's calling from Rudyard in the Eastern UP. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ron.
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I was going to mention, because we just did it, my wife and I, we just did it as some Roth conversions, and the tax that is due, from what we found out, is due when the conversion is, when you do the conversion, you expect to pay the tax then. Don't wait and figure you're going to do it when you file your taxes at the end of the year or even next year, because you will be subject to a penalty by the IRS. The taxes are due when you make the conversion. If you're willing to wait, you're probably going to get a penalty. And I went through that with our CPA. We did some reading before we did this, and so we knew it was coming, and we confirmed it with her, and she said, yes, you probably would have had a penalty had you not paid it when you did a conversion. So we went ahead and sent the check in. I just thought I'd mention that.
All right, that's good. We'll ask Heidi to expound, but basically when you put the money from one account into the brand new Roth IRA, you pay then your tax?
Well, it all depends on your particular tax situation.
Of course, it depends on something.
Some people you know, like to have a big refund, and they over, you know, they overpay the IRS. So in that case, it may not be that way. So like the gentleman on the phone, you talk to your CPA. You should always be talking to your CPA or the person who prepares your taxes to check and say, you know, how's this going to affect that. You don't want to, remember I said we don't want to jump into a higher tax bracket, and that's another question you could ask in that discussion. So help determine the amount and how you should pay the tax.
But if you do the Roth conversion, sit down with your professionals, and you say, all right, I owe X dollars in tax now because I converted. What I think our caller was saying, there's, you don't think, all right, next year when I fill out my tax form, I'll indicate on there that I did a Roth, and I'll pay it then. That if you think that way, you could be setting yourself up for a penalty?
Potentially, but again, it's going to depend on the expected amount of tax that you pay on that Roth conversion, because there is a penalty that can sneak in from the IRS of like, hey, you expected to owe this much and you held off this long, but again, that number usually is pretty high.
So always check with the professionals, the team that you have around you there. And I know a lot of times people, like everyone has a specialty. You have attorneys, tax attorneys, you have CPAs, you have financial advisors.
Right.
And so they're all kind of overlap, but not
and you
one.
You have Medicare people.
Yeah, not one knows everything. You have to have the different specialties. Well, all right, we go to the text line, and it says, you mentioned that there is no student loan forgiveness yet. Someone I know claims they received $10,000 in forgiveness on a Pell Grant. Have they been scammed? Well, not if they got the money, but I don't know how they would have, right?
Yeah, so, you know, it is up to $20,000 for qualified borrowers who received a need-based Pell Grant in college. But again, that's suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah, but bottom line, what you were saying is there are scammers out there. If somebody says, hey, I'll help you with your student loan forgiveness, give me your bank account, we'll fill out the forms here, and we'll get that expedited, don't do that.
Correct.
Correct.
There has been no application officially released yet from the Department of Education.
All right. Correct.
And with those lawsuits, you know, it could impact what the actual relief is going to be. So
yeah, they already tightened the restrictions once on who would qualify for it as well. So again, no final laws by any means.
They could they could even throw it out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And don't start spending the money yet.
Yes.
Yes. And the article did mention, like, a lot of people, a lot of students or people are Googling student loan forgiveness, and to avoid those websites that have ad at the beginning, you know, don't click on those websites because potentially it's not real.
True. Those are the ones when you Google something at the very top, it'll say ad.
Yes.
And generally you want to avoid those.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. And classes are this month, are there still openings, Deanne, in the classes?
No, we are closed.
Okay.
But the classes do start tonight, which is super exciting, and Heidi and Dennis are revved and ready to go. I know they have a true passion to educate other people in the area of finances, and so we're so looking forward to those classes. And they start tonight and will continue the next couple weeks, so we're ready to go with that.
That's a long day for Heidi.
Yes, it is.
Lots to do today.
Yes.
The next time you do your classes, they will be, the plan is, at your new offices, correct?
Yeah, we're anticipating our move at the end of this month, assuming the contractors finish when they think they are going to.
We are super excited. We will be in our new building having clients, welcoming clients in our new building on November 10th. So between now and then, it's a lot of hustle and bustle around the office. It's excitement and nervousness and anticipation and anxiety. It's all the things.
It's a big job.
Yes.
Usually dependent on how much coffee you've had by that point of the day.
But our team is so excited. Actually, we took our team over, our fantastic team, and they picked out their offices yesterday, and they are so excited to serve everybody in our new office and share it with you guys.
But a little sadness, too. You've all, I mean, especially Dennis, has been in that office how long?
Over 20 years, right?
Over 20 years on Front Street.
Yes, yeah.
I believe
absolutely.
He moved in there in 95.
95.
I might be a little off on my dates, though.
You know, every time you bump into somebody in the hallway because it's not wide enough for two people at the same time, that sort of sadness goes away.
So, yeah.
Exactly.
And only one person can fit in our kitchen at a time. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to two people getting coffee at the same time.
Yeah.
And you do, I know, like Dennis was pointing out, you have some stained glass windows or doors that at least you might be taking with you.
We might. We do.
A little decorative windows.
We will take some things from our office, the things that we want to keep.
Yeah.
And so, but a lot of new things as well, especially our new classroom, which we're getting excited and planning on how we're going to use that in the future.
Prout Financial Design will be moving then. It's the corner of 8th and Garfield, which used to be the beverage company. Comfort Keepers, it used to be.
Correct.
Yeah.
Although I talked to a client just recently on the phone, and she said she used to get her groceries there. It was a grocery store when she was a little girl.
It was Olson's back in the day.
We will
still have the same phone number, though. So, of course, any questions that you have or further discussions from the radio show, we can be reached at 231-947-3992.
All right, and I was going to ask one more thing about the new office, and it's escaping me right now. So I'll have to save that up for the next program.
Absolutely.
During the week, you can always call that number, 947-3992.
That's correct.
And schedule an appointment if you're interested in coming in with Heidi or Nathan or Dennis.
Correct.
Yep.
Talk it over. And let's see, I guess that'll cover it. That'll cover it for today. All right. Dennis Prout, gone today. We'll be back next week.
Yep.
That's the plan. You can see him tonight at the class if you're taking the class. Deanne Jennings, Director of Ops Operations.
Yes.
Thank you. Nathan, who is working on number 65 or something. What is it?
The Series 65 designation.
Series 65.
Yeah.
And Heidi, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Something like that.
Don't know what it means to me.
I love that.
No, R-I-S-P-C.
R-I-C-P.
R-I-C-P.
Thanks,
there we go. Thank you all.